नमस्ते. Someone has asked this question and it's a very valid question, that what is the purpose of creation if we have to go back to the origin? And I think people should ask this question, because we are told again and again that the purpose is mukti, moksha, nirvana. Then it gives a whole absurdity to the whole process of creation if we have to go back to the same point from where we started. And that too through so much pain, suffering, evil, all these things coming in the way. Okay, if it's the whole thing right from beginning till end is a delightful journey and then you go back in delight, it's still understandable. But surely we have missed something. And here we want to reflect upon what we have missed. But before that, let me just put this aspect, because very often, you know, we refer back to the Vedas as the ultimate authority with regard to everything. But if we go back to the Vedic rishis, what they were attempting was certainly not moksha. They were attempting to make this earth and heaven equal and one. Many of the hymns are there where the rishis are aspiring for luminous mind, for a luminous mentality, especially in the mind, intuitive mind. And there are many, even outwardly, they would ask for many kinds of gifts. Sometimes people ask this question also, that should we ask the divine for material things? Of course, we can ask the divine for everything. Who else will we ask for? Ask it for from? Because he's the origin, he's the source. But the mistake we make is to believe and limit him to only material things. He can give us material things, but he can give us much more importantly psychological things, qualities, attitudes, and even more importantly, he can give us the spiritual things, which are the eternal gifts of the grace. At the same time, if we start taking it like this, that the divine will give us material things, therefore I don't need to make any effort, then we are missing on a fundamental law of earthly life, that our effort and evolution through effort is the law of earthly life. So even when the divine gives us some gift, some effort will be required at some level. We may not realize it. It may be very minuscule, maybe just a prayer, maybe an aspiration in the heart, maybe some kind of a seeking. But eventually, as a result of it, something comes to us. It may be an effort in this life or a previous life, whatever it be. So effort and evolution through effort is the law of earthly life. And as far as the divine is concerned, he is the giver of all things, material, psychological, spiritual, which includes health, which includes outer wealth, which includes inner wealth. But the trick lies in asking him what is really useful. And both can be asked. It's not that we have to ask only spiritual things to the exclusion of material things. See, this is the attitude which went in later on, following this whole course of, you know, asceticism, mukti, nirvana, wherein we started putting this world into two parts, splitting it into two parts. One is worldly and the other is spiritual. But that's not what the divine intends, because otherwise there was no need to have material creation at all. There should have been no world. There would have been only nirvana. But it is both. And that's where we have to understand the secret that we have missed. So when we look at the origin of creation, the original impulsion is the one wants to become many. There is no logical thinking. We often say, why did the divine? Now, this is not a law. In that state, it is not logic. The divine was not sitting and, you know, thinking rationally, what should I do next? What should I do next? Okay, let me become many. It is not like that. It is just as when an artist paints or writes, it is a natural outflowing of what is within. So whatever is within, in fact, even if we look at life in general, what is it that we do, or what is it that we feel, think, it is what we are within. It is what we are flows into all we think and feel and will and do. So all creation, all life is essentially a manifestation. Manifestation of what is within in terms which are objective. So this world is an objectivization of the Supreme. First aspect we have to understand, that it's a manifestation. So what is at the origin, that will manifest itself. That also is very clear. What I am within, that will express itself. Whatever outwardly we may do. But depending on my consciousness, the manifestation will be colored like that. I may do very good things outwardly. But if inside I am a terribly egoistic person, my deeds will be colored with it. They will bear the stamp of the ego. Whereas if inwardly one is a liberated person, truly a spiritually enlightened person, then the most ordinary action, seemingly ordinary, will always carry that stamp. So, what is the divine? We are told, both by experience and realization of all the authorities, that the divine is Sachidananda. So, all manifestation will contain this. There will be existence, there will be consciousness, chit, there will be force in it and knowledge in it, and there will be ananda in it. These are the four aspects. Chit meaning thereby both knowledge as well as will. So we see that every existence from atom till man contains, it's a limited existence. It has a limited knowledge depending upon the species or the, object. And it has within it a force and it has within it some kind of a ananda. This is everywhere in all existence. And if one may say, does atom have an ananda? Do inanimate objects like stars have an ananda or not? Just look and gaze at them. You can't see an atom, but just see the picture of the electrons whirling in an atom and you will feel that joy. There is an inherent ananda in it, which it cannot feel because the consciousness is extremely limited. So similarly, in all existence, there is limited knowledge, there is limited consciousness, there is limited ananda. Man too has a limited existence, or he is aware of a limited existence. And he has a limited consciousness, a limited knowledge, he has a limited force, and he has a limited ananda. And this is the cause of suffering. If you really look at the root, it's not that God created suffering, he wanted us to suffer so that we can love him, we can, pray to him. It is so absurd, imagine the divine wanting to make us suffer so that we can say, please save me, please save me. This is, see why this has happened is, to take an aside, is that at each level of our evolution, we relate with the divine in a certain way. So, as we evolve, our relation with divine evolves. This is something which we have to remember, because in primitive societies, divine is only a judge whom we must fear. Later on, to fear is added favor. But as man evolves, he discovers new and new ways of relating with the divine. And it is important to understand, because again, people go back to the authority of the Vedas. The Vedic rishis, for all their evolution, no doubt they were involutionary beings coming from the higher worlds, but not yet the supreme. So their vision of the divine, their experience of the divine will be limited by the frame of consciousness in which they were. What they said is very true. He is one and infinite. He is Sachidananda. This sense they could have. But as we evolve, the whole experience of divine is bound to change, because that is the whole purpose of creation, purpose of existence. And that is why when they said that divine is Sachidananda, but to experience him, you have to withdraw from entirely, from all the realm of nature and enter and plunge into that, then you will have the experience. Yes, but in time to come, it may not be necessary. Because all creation is essentially a manifestation. Let's take an example, which is used in several as a metaphor. So each of us is like a drop or a wave from an ocean. The ocean is the divine. So they say that, well, we are like a wave from that ocean. So what is the purpose of the wave? It has to go back into the ocean. Why did it come at all? The purpose is that the wave is one with the ocean. It is already one with the ocean. It doesn't have to go back and realize the ocean. That's how Sri Aurobindo says. He says that we all in our essence is Parabrahman. So wanting to become Parabrahman, like a wave returning back to the sea, is an absurdity, because we already are that. This doesn't require any deep philosophical thought. We are that, because the source is in everything. Even the animal is that. The atom is that. Everything is that. So that is not the purpose, that the wave goes back. The purpose is, as a Jivan Mukta, as a wave which is free eternally and yet knows that it is with the ocean, to bring out what is hidden inside the ocean and present it to the world. So let's say there can be a wave which is very small, just rolling on the surface. Or there can be a wave which brings out the pearls which are hidden inside the ocean. Now this wave, when it brings out the pearls hidden inside the ocean, becomes a magnificent wave. Recently we had this cyclone and something very interesting happened. Some of us may not have heard this story in Andhra, in a little village. So when the cyclone came and went away, there was gold rush, you know, because there was always, they used to say in legend that there was a buried temple with lot of gold inside it. But it was like a legend. You believe it, you don't believe it. Suddenly after the cyclone, the villagers discovered that yes, there was actually many gold beads lying on the beach. And so they rushed. Now, this is not just WhatsApp news, it also came on the print media, but I cannot vouch for the veracity of it. Please don't quote me, but I found it very interesting. Because this is exactly what the manifestation is about. That there is in the depths of our own being, there is in the depths at the source of creation, so much wonder and beauty and bliss, which must express itself in a manifold way in each and every action, in each and every actually breath and heartbeat of ours. It should be like that. But we do not express it deep inside. We know it is there, but we do not express it. We search for it, and that is the cause of our suffering. So we connect with that we suffer. Why do we suffer? Because we know that we are unlimited beings. Somewhere intuitively we know. See, animals don't suffer like that. We know that we can actually be the master of the forces of nature. But we are not. So we struggle, suffer, we evolve, we try through science, we try through various means to express this intuitive sense within us, this faith within us. And because we cannot perfectly do so, we suffer. We try to look for a perfect love, a perfect bliss which will never fade, a truth which never can be mistaken, a peace which is, you know, unconditional, a beauty which never fades away. But we don't succeed. Yet the effort is to bring it out. Somewhere it is hidden inside. So all creation is meant to manifest. What we have to manifest? We go back to the origin. Infinite existence. What does it mean? Though I am this limited existence on the front, which is what we normally, you know, speak of, that well, one is so and so, limited pehchan, limited identity. But within me, there is an infinite existence. And if you become one with it, you can actually feel one with everything around, even with the elements. You see, all these people are afraid of rain, sun, cyclones. You can actually identify and draw energy. As mother said, you can make friends with the sun. So the whole idea initially was this, and that's why if we look at the Vedic culture, ancient times, in the rain, the river, creatures, everywhere you worshipped God, because he's there. And who is God? He is within us. So basically, it is me who is in all these millions, billions creatures. And if we live life like that, through experience, not just by mental thinking, whole world vision will change. The more limited I am, the more I'll suffer, and the more my relation with the world will be constantly harassed, hampered, embittered because of this limited identity. The more I reclaim my infinite existence, then I will say, you, me, this, that, all of them are none else but myself. But not this egoistic self. It's not my surname or my religion extending into everyone, but the true identity. So this will be the result of the infinite existence when we reclaim. And this is what yoga is about. It is given to man to recover, discover, uncover his unlimited infinite existence. But naturally, we have to first step back from this. If we are too badly tied that, you know what, I am Dr. So-and-so. If I am too badly tied to my identity card or my qualification, then I cannot discover. So all practices of yoga, even that initial practice of detachment, is so that we can return back to the world with a greater identity of ours. Imagine when we move through the world knowing that I am God. Does it not like the, you know, crazy man who knows what happens to them? But with a true realization, will there be any fear? Will there be any enemies? Will there be anybody to shrink from? No, because you know that there is one existence and you are that existence as much as anybody else is that existence. So this is one part. Then we can claim infinite knowledge. We have a limited knowledge because we are trying to gather knowledge through the outward senses. So we enter into things, objects, the senses grasp, try to understand, the mind analyzes, and so we progress. This one way. But when we come in touch with the infinite consciousness, with the infinite awareness, we can know things in a much more direct way. And all this life of Sri Aurobindo and the mother, life of great beings, is meant to give us a living example that this can be done. How do we know what is going on inside somebody? With a direct knowledge. We don't have to ask. So imagine how beautiful will be communication. Imagine how beautiful will be our dealing. Now, you know, everything is hampered because we don't have the true knowledge. Even if I have all the knowledge of external objects, I don't know what's going on in my partner's mind, in my neighbor's house. I can't. And look how life becomes so terrible because we don't know what's going on. We don't know about the past. We don't know about the future. I'm not speaking of immediate past, though even that is colored in our perception. Similarly, force. We act as if we are a very limited force. So we want to be always in contact with all the big wigs. You know, some people feel very proud if they have on their phone list the ministers and lawyers and police. Please, not a good sign. It means you are a most helpless creature. When you carry the divine inside you, there is an unlimited, infinite power right within us. And the whole process of yoga is to awaken it. And if that awakens, what is it that can, come in the way? Or, of course, you can't use that power for egoistic purposes. That's why to reclaim that power, you have to be freed from the ego. Imagine that kind of power in the hands of somebody who is not freed from the ego. In one of the places, the mother says, and that is the problem of the supramental world. She says, I am thinking when the supramental beings come, how much confusion there will be in the world. It's there in her notes. So she says, imagine that human beings armed with an unlimited power. So that's why she has put the condition, the only condition, get rid of the ego. You can't enter into the supramental world. This is a condition. You may live for 100 years in any setting. You may sit in meditation, do everything. But with the ego, you can't have it. For the simple reason, because that's something too tremendous. It can't be given to somebody who is still too much tied and bound to the ego. So there is an unlimited force within us. And finally, there is infinite delight within us. Now imagine when you experience that infinite delight, you don't need to go into pleasure. Often people say, oh, children are getting into this, that drugs problem and this or that. 100 ways of, seeking pleasure. Why? Because we have not experienced that joy inside us. So that's why we seek something from outside, through the senses. But when this infinite delight starts exploding, then in every activity, it's not that we'll not eat, we'll always be in delight. No, we'll eat. But now the whole thing, the eating, the meeting, the speaking, the listening, the walking, and every other activity will be infused with delight, that delight for which this creation is made. So this creation has been made to make one divine into many, many divine, not limited units. Limited units is religion. Religion says you are this, you will remain this. So what about God? He is everything. So what do I do? You pray to Him, or shortcut, you subscribe to a kind of belief system, or you change your, get converted. Now by the very fact of doing it, you will be put into that fast track towards wherever. And what about others? Unfortunate. Unless they take initiation, unless they take this, they are left out, poor creatures, because they belong to another religion. Obviously, this is an absurdity. But now in the new creation, that is not the thing. The original purpose of creation is infinite existence, infinite consciousness, infinite force, infinite delight. And that must express itself through everything. So why is it not able to express? Now if you see the long history of evolution, slowly consciousness is evolving from atom to man. Man has a capacity that in his inner being, he can discover and recover infinite existence, infinite consciousness, infinite delight. But his instruments are still lagging behind. It's like somebody who has discovered the best music. He has heard Shiva himself, all the songs and music and dance. But when he comes to dance, his feet don't move. They don't help him. He has heard Krishna's flute. But this flute, he cannot use it to express Krishna's melody. He can only make a caricature. So now we are entering that age, we have already entered, where the Divine Mother says that you have to, even your instruments can be made so perfect. Not only in the inner being one can realize all these truths, but even in the outer nature, so that everything in this world, all the activities, they all are suffused with this new new consciousness, which is nothing else but the divine consciousness. Why should Aurobindo use the word new? Because it is new to earth. It has acted hidden behind. Always the divine has acted hidden behind. But this is new to this, all our activities outside. It is new in terms of man's collectivity. It is new in terms of that this consciousness will begin to now directly organize life. Up till now, it was still the old mental, ego-ridden consciousness. So this world is created for this, for the manifestation of this Ananda, ultimately in each unit. And not only realizing it inside, so often we will see that in traditional yoga, what is it that we are here for? So we are told that we are here to realize God. So what happens after you realize God? Somebody once asked in a meeting when Guruji had come, and he was speaking about self-realization. One 14-year-old girl asked a very interesting question. She said, "Okay, Guruji, what do I do after I realize self?" There was no answer to it. And this is very valid. What do you do after realizing? What are you realizing? You are realizing what you already are. So what after that? So it is not about self-realization, but about not divine realization, but about divine manifestation. And realizing that you are divine or one with the divine is the first step towards that. Obviously, just by thought I cannot do it. I must first recover that, well, I am not this limited entity. I am divine, a portion of the divine, one with the divine, a wave that is emerged from the divine, a spark of the deathless fire. And now that I know that I am divine and not this limited entity, let me express this divinity in everything. Which means, all that from morning till night and night till morning. Mother says even in sleep and dreams you can act. Everything should be a divine expression, a divine manifestation. Naturally, it is not easy. It's a tall order and a big program. But given that already nature has done so much that from dust to man it has created. It has done a job, whatever it is. And if you look at it, well, few billion years. Man, a million years. So it has done admirably well given the time span. And now, for the further progress, Divine Mother herself has come. She said, "Okay, nature, you have done your admirable job because evolution was in ignorance. Now let me take up that final touch." Even behind nature, it is she who has been working. But now she steps in the forefront. She says, "I'll complete the high rest." There is a beautiful line in Savitri. Man is a dynamo for God's works. Nature does most in him, God the high rest. Only his soul's consent is his own. So what do we have to do for this new thing? We have to make a choice. Do we want to follow the old pattern, old way of life, thinking this is our comfort zone, this is best? Well, this life is not going to last for long. And if we think that this is going to last, we are missing the point of the dinosaur, the sloth, the mammoth. We have missed the whole story of creation. It is not going to last long. Do we want to follow the traditional approach to nirvana? Well, we may want to do it, we may do it, but no big deal about it because you are discovering what you already are. So this is a kind of sattvic illusion. Or do we want to fulfill the original purpose of creation, which is that divine manifestation? If you want to do it, for them, the supramental transformation is the path. So this is the basic thing which I wanted to share with regard to this question. There is a wonderful passage given by the mother, a dream, which we can read, but maybe we can read it as part two of this same story. So this, in a sense, is what we are here to do. We are here not only to realize the divine, we are here to manifest the divine. And realizing the divine is the first step in the process. The second step is in manifestation. Manifestation means the instruments. What are the instruments? The brain, the heart, the body, the speech, the hands, the feet, everything. All these are instruments of manifestation. So by the fact that we want to express the divine will in all this, what will happen? There will be a pressure inside. The pressure of this consciousness. It will try to push itself through all these natural instruments. So what will happen? These instruments will slowly under the pressure begin to change. Till one day, just as out of the caterpillar, there comes out the butterfly. Similarly, one day out of this human being who is a limited existence, limited consciousness, limited delight, they will burst forth a new being, the supramental being, who will not only have the new consciousness inside, but even in his body and in all that he does and speaks and expresses, there will be nothing else but infinite consciousness, infinite existence, infinite delight and infinite force. So this is the process. All evolution is like this, and this is how it is going to happen. Step one, to acquire the new consciousness. How to do it? Very simple. Open to the mother, because you know, directly from there we can receive. If somebody asks you, where do I get petrol from? So what will you say? Go to the petrol pump and plug in. So plug into the mother, she has brought in the new consciousness. What will be the expenses? Very simple. How much money I have to pay for the new consciousness? Well, it is exorbitant. What? Millions of dollars? No, dollars are useless there. So what is it that I have to pay? Pay the price of the ego and get the new consciousness. So it will be hit hard. Know that in this process, the ego will be hit real, real hard. And it is a blessing and a grace. It's a fortune that the divine has picked up and chosen. If the ego is not being hit, means perhaps we are far from the path. So it will be hit, because this is how she is making room for the new consciousness. You know, you go to a Mahaniagara and you say, I want to pick up some water in this lutia, little vessel. So what will the person say? The vessel and you both will be washed away. So she's preparing the patram through all this. She's making us wider and vaster so that we can hold a narrow, small, rigid vessel stuck into all kinds of beliefs is not ready for this. So first step will be that. So pay the price. Be ready. It's price is an installment. It's not that one day I am gone, my ego is gone. It is an installment, bit by bit. The mental ego goes when we know that all opinions, viewpoints, attachment to this idea, that idea, all this is nothing but in the realm of ignorance. Because the divine can speak through the babble of a child, even in the madman. So the moment we understand that all ideas and opinions are partial expressions of something which is far greater, then we are nearing the truth. But if we are stuck to my way, my opinion, my idea, then okay, stay stuck. Then heart, at the level of the heart, this is me, this is mine, my family, my people, my gang, my state, my language, my custom, my tradition. Okay, hold consciousness. Countless ways, east and west, through different layers of humanity, it is the one who is expressing himself. So embrace all, not only human beings, but the whole creation. So the heart expands. Life energy, limited into small little goals. What is the goal? Oh, I want to become a rich man. I want to settle down. Where? In America, whatever it meant at some point of time. Forget about the new consciousness. New consciousness means let this life be upturned as an offering to the divine, so that it can become an infinite energy, infinite delight, a luminous force. Similarly, this body, what is the goal of the body? I don't want to have illness. I just want to lead a healthy life. I want to look good till my old age, no wrinkles, all black hairs. Forget about it. But I want this body to be strong and supple vehicle and vessel of the divine light and love and peace and force and ananda. Yes, in. So that's how it will be. So this is the process, and it will take some time. First the consciousness will change. Like any evolutionary process, all the previous species are like that. Then there will be many intermediary species which will be awkward creatures. Human beings, normal human beings will say this is weird. And the weirdos will wonder who they are. Like human beings didn't know whether they are on this side of the ape or on the other side. They just felt something new about them. But they didn't know, because whenever they compared themselves with the ape, they felt very, oh my God, this is huge. Gorilla is huge. That's how they must have felt, isn't it? They can't handle mammoth comings, tigers. They don't know what they are meant for. But they felt there is something different about them. And the animal world also knew somebody has come who is different. But they continued their journey as nomads, exploring themselves, exploring this world, till ultimately they reached the point where they said, we are meant for conscious yoga, the highest and the greatest adventure ever undertaken by man. So similarly, this new creation has started. There are children, there are people who feel like stranger in this world. With all the worldly achievement, they feel something is missing, something is missing. And like the nomads of old, they have started their journey. And slowly and slowly, that they will begin to discover that, well, there is a new species stirring within us. It is no more the old species, where we have that old ape man or the cave man. So this is how the process will take place. The consciousness will grow. In various ways it will grow, by directly opening to the mother, by being in contact with, you know, beings of this kind, by being in contact with Mother and Sri Aurobindo. And of course the ashram is meant for that. And eventually, through this pressure of the consciousness, the instrument will begin to change. So this is the whole process. And I want to read this dream. I don't know whether we have time, but but we can read it. It's in Collected Works of the Mother, volume 12. And it's on page 93. And this takes us directly to the next aspect of the talk, which it was about, supposed to be about the ashram life. Because today is 2nd December and we had the physical education demonstration. So it's very interesting. You see, the ashram life has been organized in a very interesting way. So forget about, I'm not speaking about the history of the ashram, that's not important, except that it has grown spontaneously. It was never done by the mind. It was not through a mental planning. Second thing we know, ashram is an extension of Mother and Sri Aurobindo's consciousness. It is a new creation. So don't try to understand it by the ways of the old creation. No ape, however developed, can ever understand the queer ways of human beings. Okay. So don't try to understand the would-be supermen. Alright, because they have lost the human, or they are losing the human ways, and they have not yet discovered the... So there will be many beings of transition in this process. But if you go to the way the ashram life is organized, it is meant to bring in this dimension. So if you look at the ashram life, how, what it teaches us. Let me start with a simple thing like today's playground activity. What is it that you learn there? One is that to move on the path, you have to get rid of all these false identities. You have to have the youthfulness to progress. The body has to be prepared to become an instrument. So simply through the playground, we learn this. What do we learn? We are all there in the same dress, wearing half pant and t-shirt. And you may have noticed, those who saw the faces, though people had a certain age, but they all felt like a little child. We were mingling and mixing with children. We had forgotten that I am so and so. See, the outer world reminds you constantly, either which way. Either it will remind you are a big man and you have to behave like that, because otherwise you will be a social outcast. You know, if you are a politician, you have to come with that security or some security and all these things. If you are a wealthy person, you can't just roam around in, you know, knickers and, you know, though trends are changing, and eat golgappa on the road. Everything in the world will remind you, and it reinforces a false identity of age, of surname, of your outer achievements. Whereas in the ashram, everything is there to make you forget it. See, when we sit together and eat in the dining room, do we remember what caste and what qualifications? Can you imagine this happening outside? This is a way, this is a practice of getting rid of all these false identities. Then the sense of youthfulness, you actually forget age here. See the way, even in small details, how the mother has worked. The very fact you wear a dress which you associate with childhood. Isn't it? When children are small, they naturally wear shorts. And one of the things they grow up is when they start wearing full pant. Isn't it? So here you wear shorts right up to 80 and you feel like 18, maybe 80 year old. It doesn't matter, because you are like that, and you are, so it makes you forget. See, it teaches you what really is collective harmony and collective discipline, and in the process gets you rid of the ego. A simple practice of being regular and punctual trains our system to become obedient to the divine will. Forget about obeying divine will. Even our rational will, we are not able to obey. So by this practice, we begin to shed all these things, and start, the consciousness begins to become prepared to receive something high from above. And then, of course, if you look at the ashram life, days of old, how was it organized? What was the first activity people did in the morning? They had balcony darshan of the mother. So it starts with the divine. Here it starts with WhatsApp message, what is my appointments for today? That's a false start. So here it starts with, doesn't matter. Start with the divine mother. Give a few moments, just open to her. Okay, we need not come and stand below the balcony now, but you can do it wherever we are. That's what mother said. Start with gratitude, contemplating on the divine presence for a few minutes. That's how it starts. Then several times there were events where the divine mother is present. So who is at the center of the life of the ashram? It is the divine mother. Who is at the center of our life? My ego and those associated with my ego. Think about it. All the time, whatever we are doing, we are either keeping our ego at the center or somebody else. It's to please someone or to make somebody happy. Ashram life, it didn't matter. Who has to be pleased? Only the divine mother. And she is so easily pleased. How is she pleased? Just by love. Look at the operating system. Outside, to please somebody, you have to put up a show. Here, you know that show and sham doesn't work. How is she pleased? Very simply through love. So it brings out the love from the heart. And with love comes ananda and beatitude. Then again we see the conception of prosperity. You know, every month you receive prosperity. What is prosperity about? Prosperity means very simple that whatever you receive from the smallest needs, from the soap and your brush and everything, the cloth you wear is from the divine. Live with this attitude and see the life will change. That whatever I receive, it is coming from the divine. And similarly, those who joined the ashram, there were two categories. One who gave everything to the ashram, but not to the ashram, to the mother. It was to the mother. Later on, some subtle changes took place. But to the mother. So live with this idea that whatever I have is basically hers. And it is meant for her work. And if we can do that, then the whole life will begin to change. See, the only thing required for the supramental life is to get rid of the ego. The only practice. Simplest way is call mother, remember mother all the time. So naturally, where is the time to think of the ego? Serve her, do every action thinking of her. It is for her. So ego will go away. It's a very simple thing. We don't have to learn some special practice of meditation. But by the very fact that we are constantly remembering her and wanting to be in her consciousness, we will see that the ego will begin to go away. So this is the whole purpose, both individually and collectively. The life is no more centered around the ego or its expansion or around desires and its bazaar, but around the divine and its manifestation. So this is what we see. There are many aspects of the ashram life, but I just touched upon something which is the essence of things and which should be practiced anywhere, but it is very difficult to do it outside. Because here it's organized like that, it's understood, it's expected. You are given that freedom to practice that. But outside it's very difficult. Second aspect is very interestingly, in the ashram there is a balance. You see, work is 6 hours of work. And even that, some people, you know, may not. Now this work is a dedicated service. It's not for payment. So it's an offering of the body to the divine. After that, you have your time to meditate, to read something, to do some more work for the divine if you wish to. But it's never like, and even at night there used to be the last meditation with the mother. So the ashram life was meant to give you time to go within, to spend time with the divine presence. Otherwise, outside life is not at all like that. You are drained absolutely. Of course, you will get a lot of money. But in that process, you lose a lot of inner wealth. And ultimately, what happens to that money? We all know. So this is where I'll close with this dream. It's one of her writings, very beautiful, in 1954. There should be somewhere on earth a place which no nation could claim as its own, where all human beings of goodwill who have a sincere aspiration could live freely as citizens of the world and obey one single authority, that of the Supreme Truth. So this is what is important here. Here freedom is given. But if you don't obey the authority of the Supreme Truth and obey the vagaries of the ego, then there is a corrective. Within the system there is a corrective. Because there is the pressure of the Divine Mother to teach us that we are here to obey the Supreme Truth. A place of peace, concord and harmony, where all the fighting instincts of man would be used exclusively to conquer the causes of his sufferings and miseries. So this, we fight within ourselves, we fight with the ego, we fight with all our imperfections, we fight with all our desires, ignorance and darkness. This is the fight we engage in. And even we see these fighting instincts are so beautifully given a good turn, lot of physical activities, it's so important. The body has to become ready to receive that, higher truth, the higher consciousness. A place where to surmount his weaknesses and ignorance, to triumph over his limitations and incapacities. A place where the needs of the spirit and the concern for progress would take precedence over the satisfaction of desires and passions. The search for pleasure and material enjoyment. So this is what this place is meant for. It doesn't cater to pleasure and material enjoyment. Dining room food, many people find prasad and many people find it very bland. But because that food is meant to nourish us. Of course, people add something which has always been there, you know. There were always people who were adding something. Vegetables were given. Some people were using it to make the food a little bit to their taste. But the purpose is, it's not catering to that. It's not centered around that. Why I'm saying this, because some people make a fetish of everything. So you have to understand what is the purpose behind it. In this place, children would be able to grow and develop integrally without losing contact with their souls. Education would be given not for passing examinations or obtaining certificates and posts, but to enrich existing faculties and bring forth new ones. So the center of education wasn't considered as an extension of the ashram life. It is in the same place. And the purpose was very different. The very fact that the children study in this ashram atmosphere outweighs everything else. In this place, titles and positions would be replaced by opportunities to serve and organize. Ever heard anybody having this? At the most we hear HOD. But all are addressed as Da and Di. Some olden times even the departments were named like that. So once I remember when I came, I saw someone opening the windows of the physical education department. And so you think must be somebody who has to, start, and then the boss will come. That's how it happens, no? So the person who was with me, he said, "You know who he is?" I said, "No." He said, "He's Pranabda." I said, "Who?" He said, "He's the head of department of the physical education. He's opening the windows and making sure that everything is in place." Can you imagine that? In any outer setup, everything is arranged, caters to the ego. But here, you start the process. It's your house. So I have seen people who will clean the table and everything, and then they will sit. So it's not like you are given a position and a title and there are subordinates who is working for you. There are no subordinates. There are colleagues in the work. So it is the head of department is only because somebody has to be responsible, that's all. But the relation is not that of a superior and an inferior, but of colleagues. In this place, titles and positions would be replaced by opportunities to serve and organize. The bodily needs of each one would be equally provided for. So it is not a place of asceticism. You have the needs. An intellectual, moral and spiritual superiority would be expressed in the general organization, not by an increase in the pleasures and powers of life, but by increased duties and responsibilities. So the sign that you are given more work means the mother knows you are good. So otherwise, what happens outside, when you start rising up, you are the boss, so you say, "Well, now I have subordinate, they will work for me." But here, the more you rise, the more you will be given work and opportunity to serve. Because this is how the duties and responsibilities. Beauty in all its artistic forms, painting, sculpture, music, literature would be equally accessible to all. So that's what I said. This is not an ascetic ashram. This is not meant for wearing one colored cloth and doing nothing except going to food and then sitting and meditating and giving lectures and sermons. If somebody is having that idea of the ashram, then there are other ashrams nearby. This is not the place for that. Everything is there because it's a manifold ananda. The purpose of creation is a manifold ananda. So all activities are represented here. The ability to share in the joy it brings would be limited only by the capacities of each one and not by social or financial position. You want to learn swimming? You are an ashram inmate, go and learn it. Nobody asks you how much you have paid. You want to learn music? You want to practice painting? Anything creative? It is equally accessible to all. For in this ideal place, money would no longer be the sovereign lord. You are living for the mother, that's it. That's all that is there. That was the whole purpose of becoming an ashram inmate. That okay, you have decided to dedicate your life to the divine mother and the pursuit of the yoga. Individual worth would have a far greater importance than that of material wealth and social standing. There, work would not be a way to earn one's living, but a way to express oneself and to develop one's capacities and possibilities while being of service to the community as a whole, which, for its own part, would provide for each individual subsistence and sphere of action. So there is a beautiful relation between the individual and the collectivity. Everybody works for everyone, and everyone helps each one. Have you seen this? When you are sick, then it's not like, oh, ask his family. Anybody, you are working with somebody and he takes care of you. And similarly, when you work, is it that what I will get? No, it is a thing which goes into the collective sum of activities. In short, it would be a place where human relationships, which are normally based almost exclusively on competition and strife, would be replaced by relationships of emulation in doing well. He's doing something very nice. Let me learn from him. Of collaboration and real brotherhood. And then she says, the earth is certainly not ready to realize such an ideal. But the entire ashram life is organized to teach us this, to train us for this. For mankind does not yet possess sufficient knowledge to understand and adapt it, nor the conscious force that is indispensable in order to execute it. That is why I call it a dream. But she has said that the dreams of the Lord are much more truer. This is the dream which is on the way to its realization upon earth. And it is bound to be like that in small little pockets of humanity. This is the new humanity of the future. And yet this dream is in the course of becoming a reality. That is what we are striving for in Sri Aurobindo's ashram. Look at it. How beautifully she has used the word. She's not used the word Sri Aurobindo ashram. She used the word Sri Aurobindo's ashram. Changes, no, everything. Perspective. On a very small scale, in proportion to our limited means, the realization is certainly far from perfect. So she's not asking us to become dogmatic. No, everything is wonderful. Everything is glorious. No. How will we change if we don't realize that there needs to be a change within us and in everybody? So she says, we are far from perfect, but it is progressive. Little by little, we are advancing towards a goal, which we hope we may one day be able to present to the world as a practical and effective way to emerge from the present chaos, to be born into a new life that is more harmonious and true. So this is the game. And this is the purpose of creation, to have a harmonious life, a true life, a beautiful life, a life of beatitude and bliss, of ananda, in one word, a life divine. Namaste.